It's time for the truth without the spin, bias, and political correctness. Get that every day at dnewman.org. Here's your host, Dan Newman.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Tuesday, May the 8th, 2018. What a special day we have today. Specifically, we're going to look at something that will make most conservatives a bit happy because finally we're getting some information from the public record regarding the Robert Mueller investigation, at least one significant piece of it. And it came out last Friday. It surprised a lot of people. It came out of Alexandria, Virginia, and it came out of the United States District Court of the Eastern District of Virginia. The Honorable Judge T.S. Ellis III conducted a hearing, and in that hearing there was effort to hear a motion for dismissal that had been filed by Paul Manafort's representation, and fighting for the plaintiff being the United States of America, was Andrew Weissman and Michael Dreeben. Kevin Downing spoke in the courtroom for Paul Manafort. Very interesting, the approach that was taken in this court by the attorneys and by the judge. It is so significant and so necessary for every American to hear and understand exactly what's going on in that case, that we found the transcript of the hearing, and it's lengthy, and we're not going to share the entire thing. I'll tell you how you can get the entire thing at the end of this program today, but we are going to talk to you a little bit and read to you some of the back and forth directly from the transcript of the court hearing. And again, Mr. Downing is representing Mr. Manafort. And so why don't we get started? Because it is an amazing transcript from an amazing hearing that took place. Let's begin with the judge. This is the judge speaking, and all of these things that we're going to read to you are quotations. Here we go. Quote, "Apparently, if I look at the indictment against Mr. Manafort, none of that information has anything to do with links, a coordination between the Russian government and individuals associated with the campaign of Donald Trump. That seems to me to be the obvious because they all long predate any contact or any affiliation of this defendant with the campaign. So I don't see what relation this indictment has with anything the special prosecutor is authorized to investigate. It looks to me instead that what is happening is that this investigation was underway. It had something. The special prosecutor took it, got indictments, and then in a time-honored practice which I'm fully familiar with, it exists largely in the drug area. If you get somebody in a conspiracy and get something against them, you can then tighten the screws and they will begin to provide information in what you're really interested in. That seems to me to be what is happening here. I'm not saying it's illegitimate, but I think we ought to be very clear about these facts and what is happening. Now, I think you've already conceded appropriately that this investigation that has led to this indictment long antedated the appointment of a special prosecutor, that it doesn't have anything to do with Russia or the campaign, and that he's indicted, and it's useful, as in many cases by prosecutors, to exert leverage on a defendant so that the defendant will turn and provide information on what is really the focus of the special prosecutor. Where am I wrong in that regard? Mr. Dreeben, who is representing the United States, the issue, I think, before you is whether Mr. Manafort can dismiss the indictment based on his claim. The court? Yes. Now I ask you, where am I wrong about that? Mr. Dreeben, Your Honor, our investigatory scope does cover the activities that led to the indictment in this case. The judge, it covers bank fraud in 05 and 07. Mr. Dreeben, yes, because, the judge interrupts, tell me how. Mr. Dreeben, Your Honor, the authorization for the special counsel to investigate matters is described generally in the appointment order on May. The judge again interrupts. I have it right in front of me, and it won't surprise you to learn that I'm fully familiar with it. My question to you was, how does bank fraud and these other things that go back to 2005 and 07, how does that have anything to do with links and or coordination between the Russian government and individuals associated with the campaign of Trump. Mr. Dreeben, so the authorization order permits investigation of two different things that are described in separate clauses. The first are links and coordination between individuals associated with the Trump campaign and the Russian government's effort to influence the election. Mr. Manafort was a campaign official. The judge, you're running away from my question again. You know, I'm focused on the indictment that is here. Dreeben, correct. The judge, it involves facts and circumstances that go back as far as 2005 and come forward. Mr. Manafort's loans from several banks that you all claim he submitted fraudulent statements. I'm asking you, and I've already established this investigation long predated the special prosecutor. And so what is really going on, it seems to me, is that this indictment is used as a means of exerting pressures on the defendant to give you information that really is in your appointment, but it itself has nothing whatsoever to do with it. Dreeben, well, Your Honor, I understand the question. I'm trying to explain why I think that it does have to do with our investigatory scope, and I think there are a couple of premises that may help illuminate what that investigatory scope is. The first one is that in examining an individual who was associated with the Trump campaign and did have Russian-affiliated connections, which Mr. Manafort did, the court, are they Russian or Ukrainian? Dreeben, both. Mr. Manafort worked extensively in Ukraine, and he also has business connections and other connections to individuals associated with Russia. And following the leads from those things, investigators want to understand the full scope of his relationship, how he was paid, with whom he associated, what happened to the money, and that leads to the activities that are at issue in this indictment. The judge, well, it didn't lead to that. This was given to you by the Department of Justice. The investigation was already well underway going back to 2005, am I correct? Dreeben, well, I think, Your Honor, the investigation has developed considerably with the special counsel. The judge, wasn't it already in existence in the Department of Justice, and they gave it to you when you were all appointed? Dreeben, there were investigations that were in existence, yes, but those investigations were folded together with our overall examination of Mr. Manafort's conduct that fits within sections B, little I. The court, all right, do you have it in front of you? Dreeben, yes. I think you would agree, the judge continued, that the indictment that we have before the court is not triggered by little letter I, which says, quote, any links and or coordination between the Russian government and individuals associated with the campaign of President Donald Trump, end quote. Bank fraud in 05 and other things had nothing whatever to do with that. So then you go to number two. It says, quote, any matters that arose or may arise directly from the investigation. Well, this indictment didn't arise from your investigation. It arose from a pre-existing investigation, even assuming that little letter II is a valid delegation because it's open-ended. Go ahead, sir. Dreeben, so I would take a different look at the way this order works than Your Honor's description for a couple of reasons. The judge? All right. Dreeben, the first is that in provision C, which is in the order, the special counsel is authorized to prosecute matters that arose from the investigation that is described earlier in the preamble, and in B, little letter I, and B, little letter II. So we are not limited in our prosecution authority to crimes that would fit within the precise description that was issued in this public order. If the investigation is valid, the crimes that arose from that investigation are within the special counsel's authority to prosecute. The court, even though it didn't arise from your investigation, it arose from a pre-existing investigation. Dreeben, well, the investigation was inherited by the special counsel. The judge, that's right, but your argument says even though the investigation was really done by the Justice Department, handed to you, and then you're now using it, as I indicated before, as a means of persuading Mr. Manafort to provide information. It's vernacular, by the way. I've been here a long time. The vernacular is to sing. That's what prosecutors use. But what you've got to be careful of is they may not just sing. They may also compose. I can see a few veteran defense counsels here, and they have spent a good deal of time in this courtroom trying to persuade a jury that there wasn't singing, there was composing going on. But in any event, finish up this point, and then I'll come back to the defendant. Dreeben. Well, Your Honor, we are the Justice Department. We are not separate from the Justice Department. The acting attorney general appointed us to complete investigations and to conduct the investigation that's described in this order. In addition, the acting attorney general has made clear in testimony before Congress, this order does not reflect the details of the matters that were assigned to us for investigation. And the word arose from that's contained in little letter B is not a full and complete description that's meant to be judicially enforceable of the matters that were entrusted. The judge. So it's written by lawyers, but not intended to be judicially enforceable? Dreeben. It's certainly not intended to be judicially. The judge interrupted him. I think you're better off arguing that it's very broad and that the matters that are here are well within it. But to say that you can write a letter delegating a job to someone but don't pay any attention to the scope of it is not very persuasive, to say the least. Dreeben. Well, judge interrupted him again. What we don't want in this country is we don't want anyone with unfettered power. We don't want federal judges with unfettered power. We don't want elected officials with unfettered power. We don't want anybody, including the President of the United States, nobody to have unfettered power. So it's unlikely you're going to persuade me that the special prosecutor has unlimited powers to do anything he or she wants. By the way, your office was appointed, you say, in May 2017. Is there any requirement that you make reports periodically to the Attorney General? Dreeben, yes, sir. The judge, does that include financial? I think you were given $10 million to begin with. Dreeben, we have proposed a budget and had a budget approved. The judge, of $10 million? Dreeben, I believe that's correct. The judge, have you spent that yet? Dreeben, I am not in a position to talk about what our budget is. The judge, are you in a position to tell me when the investigation will be over? Dreeben, I am not, Your Honor. The court, all right, well, I understand that. And it isn't pertinent to what I have to decide today. I understand you're not being in a position to tell me, but I'm sure you're sensitive to the fact that the American people feel pretty strongly no one should have unfettered power. All right, I think you've answered my questions, Mr. Dreeben. If you want to say anything else, now, of course, you're going to have a full opportunity to respond to the defendant's arguments, but I had some preliminary questions which I think you've answered. Dreeben, I think I should clarify one thing, Your Honor. We are not operating with unfettered power. We're operating within a framework of regulations that contemplate regular reporting to the acting attorney general, who is supervising the work of our office within the framework of... Judge interrupted him. Is that Rosenstein? Dreeben, yes. The judge, is he not recused? Dreeben, no. He is the acting attorney general who appointed the special counsel and who is operating in the framework of internal Department of Justice regulations. This is not the Independent Counsel Act that Your Honor was referring to in the conference that you spoke of. This is not a separate court-appointed prosecutor who's operating under statutory independence. We are within the Department of Justice. We're being supervised by an acting attorney general who has conferred upon us specific jurisdiction and who regularly is in a position to describe to us the meets and bounds of that. There is in this record a memorandum that he issued on August 2nd that explains that crimes that arose from Mr. Manafort's receipt of payments from Ukraine is within our jurisdiction and was at, the judge interrupts, yes, I have that right here, and I'm glad you raised it because 75% of it is blocked out. It's redacted. Why don't I have a full copy of it? Dreeben, the only paragraphs that are pertinent to Mr. Manafort are the ones that are contained in this record. The judge, well, let me use a phrase that I'm fond of that I used to use with my kids. I can't use it with my wife, but I'll be the judge of whether it relates to the others. I think you should give me under seal to be sure, and you can do it ex parte if you wish. Under seal, ex parte, a complete copy of the August 2nd, and I'll be the judge of whether it has anything to do with Mr. Manafort. Dreeben, Your Honor, if I could ask leave to consult with the relevant components of the intelligence community because that is a classified document. The judge, yes, of course you may do that. If any part of it is classified, it won't surprise you to know that a district judge is fully cleared. In fact, I have several espionage trials underway now. If SEPA is needed, we will invoke it and use it, but I don't think it will be necessary. I just want to be sure I understand it fully. What you're telling me is that the redacted portions don't have anything to do with Manafort or the issue he's raised. I don't have any reason to doubt, especially because you're making, in effect, a representation, but I'm not bound by that. I need to satisfy myself. That's why I want to know. I think it's perfectly appropriate for you to consult with other parts of the government, particularly intelligence agencies. If they feel some of it is classified, I'm prepared to look at it ex parte under seal. I am fully familiar with that process. You may take some time to. You can have 2 weeks to explore that. Now, thank you. Do you have anything else at this time, Dreeben? I just wanted to connect the dots with my reference to the August 2nd scope memorandum. Even if Your Honor is not satisfied that on the face of the May 17 order, the charges in this indictment are within the scope of the special counsel, the August 2nd memorandum confirms the acting attorney general's understanding both at the time of our appointment and as of the time of that memo that these crimes are within the scope of our authority. And the explanation for the greater detail in the August 2nd memo is that the public order was not the place or occasion to provide details about the matters that the special counsel was to investigate. So we are not operating off the range of what the acting attorney general has authorized us to do. I would respectfully submit that under Fourth Circuit law, the regulation that Mr. Manafort is relying is not a judicially enforceable matter. I understand Your Honor's view on that. I think we have provided case law on why we don't think it's a matter for judicial enforcement. Even if the court does, we do have written confirmation that the matters in the indictment are within our scope. The judge then said, I've actually heard probably most of their argument. I haven't heard all of yours. You may now tell me what you think. And then he refers to Mr. Downing, who is the attorney representing Paul Manafort. And Downing talks about writing briefs, gives several comments, and then the judge interrupts him and says, tell me why you've heard him say, talking about the other side, the U.S. special counsel side, I mean, their arguments are fairly straightforward. They say you look at the May 17th letter. It says any links and or coordination between the Russian government and individuals associated with the campaign of President Trump. Secondly, any matters that arose or may arise directly from the investigation, which I focused on their investigation rather than the Department of Justice's, but that's a fair point. And then the third one is another matter within the scope of 600.4 of Title 28 Code of Federal Regulations. Then counsel appropriately called my attention to the August 2nd memorandum from Rosenstein, which amplifies that a bit. Of course, most of the letter's redacted, but I'm advised that doesn't have anything to do with Mr. Manafort. I'm going to look at that myself. But that goes on to say whether crimes were committed by colluding with Russian government officials with respect to the Russian government getting in efforts to interfere with the 2006 election for president. That was pretty clear from the May letter. But then they go on to say, committed a crime or crimes arising out of payments he received from the Ukrainian government before or during the tenure of President Viktor Yanukovych. Well, we could argue all day here and not get very much clarity on whether there's a difference between the Ukraine and Russia. Of course, I wasn't there any later than about 40 years ago. But if you ask the average Ukrainian, they will tell you there's a huge difference. On the other hand, the government makes a very powerful point. Yanukovych's operation was supported by the Russian government. He did essentially what they wanted him to do, but he's not there anymore. People are killing each other in the eastern Ukraine. My hunch is that it's Ukrainians and Russians that are mostly fighting. Downing, actually, Your Honor, we spent a lot of time on this issue. For the work that Mr. Manafort was involved with Mr. Yanukovych, Downing, they were leaning towards getting into the European Union. They were actually trying to get further away from Russia. Those were the efforts of Mr. Manafort. For today, I will say that the first comment that you had has to do with the record. You asking for an unredacted document so you can confirm what has been represented to you by the government is, in fact, true and correct. Verify. So the biggest problem we've seen in the opposition to our motion is that this August 2nd memo, I'm not sure what we would refer to it as, is the only document that's been provided by the government to verify that, in fact, they did not violate the special counsel's statute or the regulation. It seems very irregular for the judge. There isn't any guidance in the statute, is it? Downing, no, sir, the statute says as specifically directed. Special counsel, as you know, the regs came about in a response to Congress, and a bipartisan commission decided that having a continuation of the independent counsel statute was a bad idea. They were really bad results. So the regs, as adopted, basically said to Congress, to the courts, and to the American public, this won't happen again. We have a politically accountable officer of the government, the Attorney General, and we have a specific factual mandate if a special counsel, judge interrupts, by politically accountable, what do you mean, Downing? I mean someone who is Senate confirmed and appointed by the President of the United States, the judge. Serves at the pleasure of the President? Downing, correct, Your Honor. The judge, so could be fired? Downing, correct. The judge, go on. Downing, that politically accountable officer now is the acting Attorney General because of a conflict or a recusal that occurred with the Attorney General. That conflict was necessary for the acting Attorney General to look to the special counsel statute and say, okay, I need to appoint a special counsel. Now what happens next under the regs, it says a specific factual description, which you have in point one, we would agree. And then for an additional jurisdiction for any additional matters to be investigated, the acting Attorney General, the politically accountable government official, has to grant additional jurisdiction. It doesn't say, sure, go ahead and do whatever you want. It says jurisdiction because unless the acting AG conveys jurisdiction on the special counsel has no authority to act. The special counsel is very limited. He has the authority of a U.S. attorney to the extent he's been given specific jurisdiction and additional jurisdiction. That second part of the appointment order completely eviscerates the special counsel regulations that require that the special counsel come back to the acting AG, confer if he wants to expand his investigation, and then there has to be determination made by the acting attorney general to grant additional jurisdiction. On the record we have in front of us right here, that did not happen. What we've asked for is for the government to produce the record. The investigation that ends up here was an investigation that was being conducted by the U.S. Attorney's Office in the Eastern District of Virginia for quite some time. We have no record of how that investigation got transferred to the special counsel. We have no record how an investigation involving banking issues made its way to the special counsel. We only have, judge interrupts, well, let me ask you, so what? In other words, is what you're arguing that the use of that investigation in this case is contrary to the regulation that requires the acting AG here, Rosenstein, to be specific about what areas he wants investigated, and you're saying he was too general. In the supplemental, doesn't he remedy that in the August 2nd letter? Downing, he can't retroactively remedy it. The question is, as of that date, what he did, does it give jurisdiction to the special counsel? Or is it still so unrelated to the specific mandate as to be in violation of the regulations in the underlying statute? That's the question. You, I think, early on got right to the point, which is this doesn't really make any sense. This doesn't look like it's related. Prior cases, and there are cases that involve the special counsel, always look to is demonstratively related. The idea here is to keep a narrow jurisdiction on the special counsel to not end up with another independent counsel. When you see section B little II, it looks like another independent counsel. It didn't even require for Mr. Mueller to go back to Mr. Rosenstein if he wanted to expand. It just says anything that arises or may arise. The judge, let's assume for a moment your argument that this delegation is in some way illegal. Why isn't the right result simply to give to the Eastern District of Virginia's U.S. Attorney's Office, give it back to them, and let them prosecute this indictment? Why isn't that the right result? Downing, well, the right result may be for the Department of Justice to finish the investigation they had started and make a determination as to whether or not to charge Mr. Manafort. But if, in fact, this order is defective, then Mueller did not have the authority of the U.S. attorney to conduct a grand jury investigation, to get search warrants, or to return and sign an indictment. The judge, all right, I think I understand. Is there anything else you want me to? Downing, we make, I think, one point for the court, and I think it's an important point. The government had argued initially that these matters arose during their investigation. I think the government is now admitting, nope, they didn't. That's a big admission, and it wasn't in their papers. All the way up to being in court here today, I have not heard the government admit to the court that that's exactly what happened. It looked like, the judge, what's exactly what happened? Downing, that they grabbed these investigations from other components of the Department of Justice in the U.S. The judge, you say these investigations, are you saying this indictment against Mr. Manafort? Downing, yes, Your Honor. The judge, all right, go on. Downing, so in their papers, they've been arguing, oh, they came upon this during their investigation. That's not the facts. So I'd like to make that record clear that their arguments in their brief are absolutely erroneous. It didn't arise during it, And I think that matters because their other argument was this whole thing falls into the first specific description, which I think you've pointed out. In no way does it make any sense that it falls into the first description. Then finally, when you go and look at Mr. Rosenstein's memo, it's very odd for when it occurs, but the most obvious omission from it is it does not say as we agreed or as we discussed. It just puts something in a point in time with no relation back to what happened on or before May 17th. Folks, we're 25 minutes into this transcript. There's a bunch of meat left, and I'm going to give you the synopsis of it. It's very important. You guys need to know what is going on as we speak. And unfortunately, the news media doesn't give it to us. So we get it right here at dnewman.org.
Hi, this is Christina Ricci with RAIN. Every 2 minutes, another American is sexually assaulted. If you or someone you know has been sexually assaulted, you are not alone. Help is just a call or click away through the National Sexual Assault Hotline. Please call 1-800-656-HOPE, that's H-O-P-E, or visit rain.org, that's RAINN.ORG.
Brought to you by RAIN and this station.
Don't ever miss a story or podcast. Get an email link to every new story and podcast by entering your email address on the homepage of dnewman.org. If it's relevant, you'll get it here.
And boy, is today's topic relevant. We have been sharing the actual transcript of the hearing held in Virginia on Friday, May the 4th, in which Paul Manafort and his attorneys were petitioning the judge in the case to drop some of the charges that the special counsel has filed against him. And we pick up that in the transcript, the judge is now talking to several of the attorneys that are in the room, but specifically addressing what's going on and why he should not, if he should not, listen to Manafort's attorney and drop these charges. The judge says this: you know, when a prosecutor is appointed, he's appointed to get an indictment. He's appointed to go after somebody. Somebody mentioned to me not long ago that this is a different scheme, that it's not the scheme that was in effect in the 60s and 70s. That's true. But I suspect the change in this process is not significant. It's still the same. It's still the same. You appoint a prosecutor, that prosecutor goes after with the intent, whether it was Clinton or whoever else it was, Reagan or whoever, they go after him with the idea they're going to get an indictment. If they don't, they're very unhappy. I remember speaking to one special prosecutor, the Iran-Contra thing, and he was terribly disappointed. That's what prosecutors do. I understand that. In any event, your point, if I can distill it to its essence, is that this indictment can be traced to the authority the special prosecutor was given in the May and August letters. That, as far as you're concerned, is the beginning and the end of the matter. Now Dreeben speaks, who is the United States attorney. Yes, Your Honor, it is the beginning and almost the end. And this is my last point, I promise, the judge. Okay. The special counsel regulations that my friend is relying on are internal DOJ regulations. He referred to them as if they're a statute. I want to be clear. They are not enacted by Congress. They are internal regulations of the Department of Justice. The court, most regulations aren't enacted by Congress. They're promulgated by agencies pursuant to rulemaking authority. Dreeben, correct, the judge. Congress doesn't do it, correct. But he referred to them as a statute. I just wanted to be clear. I'm going to fast forward here so we can get down to some more meat. So give me just a second. Is this interesting to you or not? First of all, let me tell you this. We are going to put the PDF version of this entire transcript on our website for you to be able to pick up and read the entire thing by yourself. And so let's do this. Let's just stop what we're doing and come up with a synopsis and tell you pretty much what is going on in this courtroom. This judge basically is telling the representatives for Robert Mueller, Weissman, the infamous Weissman, great Democratic attorney that has destroyed several entities in federal court cases that were reversed dramatically, put hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of people out of work in federal court cases that were reversed dramatically by the U.S. Supreme Court. Weissman is there in the courtroom. He's the kind of bulldog, the pit bull for Robert Mueller. And the judge is basically calling them out on what they have done and what they are doing with Paul Manafort. He's making it very clear that the issues that they have charged Manafort with probably are crimes that were committed, but they were committed in 2005 and 2007. And it's not mentioned in the transcript, but it came out later that the Justice Department back then, when this all came to light in the Obama administration, Eric Holder was the Attorney General, that the Attorney General and the Justice Department looked at all of these matters and felt like there wasn't enough meat on the bones to warrant a real investigation and to make any charges against Paul Manafort. You fast forward to this year, why does this judge say in his interpretation of what's going on that it looks like all they're trying to do is find something, anything that they can tie Donald Trump, his campaign officials, or anybody to? He didn't use the term flip, but basically he inferred that's what this special counsel is looking for. This was a very dramatic court hearing. It was very unexpected that this outcome would come out of that. And the book is still out. Remember, the big thing is that second memo that they classified, and the judge hasn't seen it, the full memo, that according to this attorney for Mueller, Rosenstein gave them authority to do what they're doing right now. The memo hasn't been read. The judge gave them 2 weeks from last Friday. So a week from this Friday, they have got to provide the full memo to the judge so he can make the actual interpretation of what the heck really is going on. And you know what may happen? Manafort might get some of these charges dropped. Maybe get all of them dropped. Who knows? But one thing we do know, that judge is on the warpath. Folks, just think about this. The United States government is supposed to work for you and me. The U.S. Justice Department is supposed to work for me and you. And that includes the FBI, CIA, and all the other departments that comprise the Justice Department. And in many cases, it has been imagined for a long time that the Justice Department is doing their own thing. They're finding for personal benefit, for the benefit of others, maybe people that they're indebted to, finding ways to help those circumvent the law and attack others that members of the authority in D.C. at the time have a reason to go after. It's a sad thing, but maybe, just maybe, that hearing last Friday is the beginning of the truth, the beginning of the erosion, the dismantling of the deep state that has got a major foothold in Washington, D.C., and therefore a major foothold in controlling our lives. This is the home of the brave. We're free. We need to stay that way. Thank you so much for joining us today. It's been real. Once again, I want to remind you, on the front page of dnewman.org, in this story, there will be a PDF transcript, full copy of the actual transcript, the script of this court hearing that was held last Friday in Virginia. Please download it, read the whole thing, pass it around if you'd like to. And of course, as always, I'd love to hear from you. You can post your comments at the website, or you can send me an email if you want to be anonymous. I get a lot of those. Believe me, there are a lot of folks that want to express their opinion, but they want to go unnamed. That's okay. My email address is dan@dnewman.org. That's dan@dnewman.org. Let me hear from you. Until next time, you have a great day. Thanks for joining us. So long, everybody.